You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Oxfam America has recently come under fire from the Global Food Justice and Food Sovereignty Movement for its stance on genetically modified crops. A report issued this year called Biotechnology and Agricultural Development, Transgenic Cotton, Rural Institutions, and Resource-Poor Farmers reports on the outcome of an Oxfam America project funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. An open letter was sent to the UK and Washington offices of Oxfam to protest the Oxfam team's stance that, quotes, transgenic crops offer enormous possibilities, and to advance a strong critique of the research. Anuradha Mittal is the executive director of the Oakland Institute. It's one of the original signatories of the letter, and she joins me this morning from California. Hello, Anuradha.
Hello, Lauren. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you again. Now, what was the nature of the project, which was funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, that was the basis for Oxfam's report?
This project was supposed to look at the possibilities of biotechnology in improving the lives of resource-poor farmers in third-world countries. And this project specifically looked at BT cotton in India, China, South Africa, and Colombia to determine if it could indeed help farmers in improving their livelihoods and thereby impacting poverty in these countries. The project did say that it was not going to look at the environmental impacts, gender impacts, or other social economic implications of this technology, and they were going to just look at the performance of BT cotton to be able to determine. So the report is very clear what they are looking at and what they're not. Most of the report is based on secondary research, i.e. looking at other research which might claim that this technology works. And that was a big issue for us because whether it is China, whether it is South Africa or India, there's enough research that demonstrates that just performance-wise that the technology has not worked for the farmers. It is anyway a very resource-intensive technology which is protected by intellectual property rights and is increasing the debts for the poor farmers who are having to pay more for these BT cotton seeds.
The report was on BT cotton. Can you tell us about that particular crop and the nature of its genetic modification?
Oh, definitely. BT cotton is supposed to be, or companies such as Monsanto claim, that it is designed and genetically engineered in such a way that it would be able to deal with bollworm attacks on cotton, which is a very big problem. And so it already has the pesticide in it to be able to deal with the attacks of bollworm, which destroys cotton crops in many parts of the world, is a huge big issue. However, what has happened with this crop is, as Monsanto just acknowledged on March 7th in India, that its BT cotton is no longer effective because bollworms have not developed resistance to the pesticide that is in this crop. So the farmers have to buy extra pesticides, more expensive pesticides, and are using much more of it to deal with the attacks of bollworm. And also, places such as China, South Africa, and other places have seen secondary pest attacks as well, which are not developing resistance. So basically, it's a nightmare for farmers who are having to pay more for these genetically engineered seeds, but also having to spend a lot on pesticides, which they were told they wouldn't have to spend.
Well, let's look at your criticisms in detail there. You've got three main criticisms that you outlined in the open letter to Oxfam, and I'd like to kind of take them one by one. So in the letter, you give a lot of detail on research that Oxfam excluded from its analysis on genetically modified cotton. What did they leave out that's crucial for us to understand?
Well, that's an important question, Lauren. So let's look at the countries that Oxfam America looks at. Let's start with the case of China. China was one of the first countries that where the farmers adopted BT cotton, and a report that came out from University of Cornell at Ithaca, which was headed by the ex-director general of IFPRI, Pierre Penstrup Anderson, clearly said that after 7 years of gains, the farmers in China were seeing a decline in their gains because the farmers were having to deal with secondary pest attacks. As I said before, BT cotton is engineered to be able to deal with attacks from bollworm, but after 7 years, they were seeing that bollworm was developing resistance, but they were also seeing secondary pest attacks, which was meaning that they were having to use more pesticides, and the gains had declined compared to farmers who were using conventional cotton seeds. this report does not mention that study at all. Let's take the case of South Africa, where the report claims that the farmers in Makatani Plains have benefited enormously and are using a lot of BT cotton. What the report does not detail is a study by BioWatch, for instance, which shows that the farmers did not have a choice. That choice was taken away from farmers of what kind of seeds they could use. And as a result now, because they had huge, big expenses in terms of buying these seeds and then using the pesticides, they have now stopped using the BT cotton, and the choice has been taken away. The credit facilities have been taken away from these farmers in South Africa. So these important studies, which have been done by people and groups on the ground, were left out by Oxfam America. Let's take the case of India. In the case of India, it is a known fact that every half an hour, a farmer in India is committing suicides. Yes, the farmer suicides cannot be blamed entirely on BT cotton, but we do know that they're very prevalent in the cotton belt and have become much more so for farmers who are paying, you know, taking much more loans to buy these seeds and then seeing these crops fail. And the report does not mention the study of a scientist from India who in 2004 clearly outlined that using a certain model, he could show that in a few years, bollworm will be resistant to BT cotton. They did not mention that study, and come March 7th, Monsanto itself acknowledged that BT cotton is failing in India because bollworm has developed resistance to it. So these are just some samples of the studies, very key studies that were left out by Oxfam America. And the conclusion goes on to say that, you know, this technology has great potential, but we need to focus on investing in institutional frameworks in these countries. Kind of shocking for us that a development organization would urge developing countries to spend the resources on building institutional frameworks to adopt this technology instead of doing what we all know has to be done. Focus on small-scale farmers and technologies which are low input-based and will not put farmers in further debt.
Anuradha, you also criticize Oxfam for appearing neutral while endorsing GM crops. What's the basis of that accusation?
Well, you know, if you look at the report and you look at the summary of the report, Oxfam America kind of declares that the importance of the study is that the debate around genetically modified crops is a very polarized debate, and that there's no possibility for reconciliation, and therefore it is very important for an objective organization such as Oxfam America to, you know, to deal with this issue. And when you look at the study, which is so biased, which concludes that this technology has great potential, ignores some of the key findings, one would say that they are actually taking a side in a very polarized debate. And the report could actually be used by the marketing departments of Monsanto's and other biotech agribusinesses to say, hey, here's a development organization which is saying that this technology has great potential. The problem is the lack of institutional structures in third world countries.
I want to come back now to your point on that Oxfam's focus on GM crops as a solution to help resource poor and subsistence farmers actually deflects from real change. Can you explain why they're on the wrong track here?
Well, you know, for us, a huge big problem is that, you know, we saw hunger increase in the world when the food prices went up in 2008. It is estimated that over 1 billion people go to bed hungry, are, you know, chronically malnourished in this world. We also know that in 2008, a very important report, ISTAD, which is International Assessment on Agricultural Knowledge, Science, Technology and Development, came out, which has been ratified by over 60 countries, that clearly said that we cannot continue with business as usual. We need different kind of agricultural policies that would prioritize small-scale agriculture, sustainable agriculture. The report went on to say that, you know, opening up of markets or genetically modified crops are not the solution to hunger. Unfortunately, that report has been so ignored by countries, you know, the obvious ones such as Canada and United States, because of their intensive focus on this technological revolution, promoting the interest of corporations. They've ignored it. And it is very, very shocking for us when development organizations such as Oxfam start sounding the same rhetoric of Monsanto-like corporations or of USAID instead of listening to the partners and farmers' organizations on the ground.
It's really a big step for the food justice movement to write a publicly critical letter of an NGO that many would identify as an important contributor to the fight against global poverty. Why did the Oakland Institute and your other food movement partners take that step?
Lauren, I'm glad you're asking this question because this was not an easy step for any of us. We deeply respect and honor the role that Oxfam has played. And it was, the sad irony that what funding from Rockefeller Foundation or Gates Foundations can prompt civil society to do. So, you know, it is never easy to call one of our own. But at the same time, because we recognize the role that Oxfam has played, we felt it was important to connect with them. And believe me, there was a long process of interaction within Oxfam, of interacting with Oxfam. I was at the panel where the report was launched, outlining what the problems of the report were, offered the additional information that should be included in the report. But when we saw that it was not going anywhere else and the threat it poses, because we know right now Kenya, for instance, has been blocking 40,000 tons of GM corn that is sitting on its docks from South Africa, that this kind of push from a northern organization which denies space for third world governments, which denies space for third world farmers organizations to determine what kind of food will be grown, how will it be grown, it felt important that we have to let our views be known to Oxfam America and to Oxfam International, as well as to educate people. So I hope, for instance, the listeners who are supporters of Oxfam will continue supporting Oxfam because it does important work. But at the same time, inform Oxfam that they support Oxfam because it stands up for the poor. And when it starts getting, agenda dictated by the Gates Foundation or Rockefeller Foundation, that we will stand up and challenge the organization.
What response have you had to the letter from Oxfam?
Well, the response that we have had is that this is mischaracterization of our research, which is a little bit ludicrous because, the evidence is in the report itself. It is not my word against their word. It is really for anyone who wants to pick up a copy of their report. It speaks for itself. Or, for instance, there's a proposal that Oxfam America had submitted to the Gates Foundation, which clearly shows that the goal is to promote BT cotton in Burkina Faso. It is very much in the public domain. So it is not about mischaracterization, but at the same time, we are aware of the fact that there are intense debates happening within Oxfam International. And, for instance, Oxfam France and many others are putting pressure on Oxfam America to have a position which does not promote biotechnology as a solution to world's hunger or to alleviate poverty amongst third world farmers.
Now, you've had additional organizations sign on to the open letter. Where do you think that this critical issue is going to go from here?
Well, I think the feedback that we have had, and trust me, from partners within Oxfam who have been telling us that this letter was extremely helpful to open up the space within Oxfam International to be able to debate and discuss what real positions represent the viewpoints and desires of the poor people whom the organization claims to represent. At the same time, people are aware of what's happening. So, for instance, groups in Africa are going to be watching Oxfam America moves very carefully. I think a lot of damage, unfortunately, has been done, and Oxfam America will have to rebuild those relationships and gain that trust back. It is an unfortunate thing that has happened, but there was no other way of going about it.
Well, I really appreciate your talking us through this issue this morning, Anurad, and it's great to talk to you as always.
Thanks so much, Lorraine, for allowing us the space to share this viewpoint. And if people have any questions, by the way, and listeners, I would urge them to visit our website where they can see a copy of the letter and the summary of the report. And website is oaklandinstitute.org.
Thanks so much. I've been speaking with Anurada Mittal. She's the executive director of the Oakland Institute. And as she says, for more information and to read the open letter, it's available on their website at oaklandinstitute.org. And you're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.